This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
It's going to be a long hour with producer Paddy through the glass on the Manchester United fan show. Let me tell you, Joe Forrester here, taking you through the next hour. If you want to get in touch, 0208 70 20 558. You could give us a message on social media at Love Sport Radio. That's on Twitter and Instagram. Manchester United involved in European action on Thursday night, of course. 5-0 winners in the Europa League, beating LASK. That could be the last involvement an English or a British football club has in football for some time. Top level football club, of course, I'm talking about. Here to talk to me about Manchester United this evening, Ben Senior is with us. Good evening, Ben.
Evening, mate. How are we?
Pretty good, thank you. Pretty good. Look, we'll move on to obviously the coronavirus and the implications and that kind of thing. But let's start with Thursday night's action. Daniel James ending his Barron run. Five different scorers away in Austria. What did you make of the action?
Yeah, I mean, if you take that game just on its own, the performance, the result is everything we could have asked for, really. I know when we were previewing the game last week, it was a case of last were a bit unorthodox. We didn't really know much about them and weren't sure, turning up there, what we'd get. But like you said, goal for Dan James, and I think that'll do him the world of difference with his confidence, because he's needed that. You've seen him play, and he's actually put in some decent performance recently, but he just needed that goal to push him on. And Bergodian up front, his goal was ridiculous. The touches, the way he brought it down and then slotted it top bins was really nice to see. So, yeah, on that game alone, there's a lot of positives and a lot of good individual performances as well.
United have massively, massively improved over the last few weeks, or certainly the things that were going well have all clicked into gear. Have you started to feel that maybe Ollie's plan is coming off?
Yeah, you can sort of start to see that. And I know we talk of Bruno as being this sort of catalyst that came in January, and he has been a massive part of why our form has turned in the year, really, and in the season. But you can see it with the clean sheets we've got from the back. Harry Maguire looks like the Harry Maguire that we actually wanted to buy, alongside Lindelof, who's looked solid, Wan-Bissaka, and then Shaw's coming back into form as well now. So you've sort of seen that we're actually slotting into places, and we seem to be getting this system where, okay, Ollie seems to have two types of systems, the 4-2-3-1, you can call it, with Fernandes behind the striker, and then that 3/5 at the back for the games where we don't expect to have the ball as much. So, yeah, I can see that Ollie's tactics are sort of paying off a little bit, and all over the pitch we're looking a lot more solid.
Do you think that he's been hard done by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? I think people wrote him off before he'd even started. That they looked at Cardiff and they looked at the time he'd had in Norway and gone, well, that's not much of a CV. But is it a case that, well, I mean, any manager needs a bit of time to bed in?
Oh, massively. And I think the issue is, with hindsight, is looking back on it. Look, when he first came into the club, we were at quite a bad place in terms of the feeling around the club with Mourinho. And the way he left and the players' confidence were at rock bottom. And the way he came in and totally turned it around. And the upsurge that we had was phenomenal, really, and the games he went on to. And then obviously we know when he got the permanent contract, the form sort of went off a cliff, really. So I think he sort of was a bit detriment to himself, really, the start that he did have. But you can see it coming. And he actually has done quite a lot of work, even just with transfers, with everything around the squad. He's got rid of Deadwood in the summer and got rid of players that possibly didn't want to be at the club and didn't fit into the system well. And you can sort of see him building something. Look, whether he's going to be the United manager for 3-4 years down the line remains to be seen. But right now, at this minute in time, you can't argue the fact that he's doing the best job that anyone, I think, could do in that role.
No Premier League football I mean, no football in the top four tiers for at least 3 weeks. Some options open to the Premier League. Award the title to Liverpool. Have no relegation with West Brom and Leeds, who are currently obviously the top two in the Championship, to be promoted. 22 teams in the Premier League next season. Does that seem realistic to you?
It's a bit of a mess at the minute, isn't it?
Yep.
We're in a sort of a situation where no one really knows what's going to happen. And look, at the minute, with obviously everything that's going on with coronavirus, it's important to note that football is only a little insignificant part of this in terms of the whole world and everyone's health, and in some cases it being a life or death scenario. Mm. But in terms of the football and what we should do with the rest of the season, it's difficult to know at this, because if you say now that, okay, we're going to void this season off and no one gets a league title or no one gets relegated, then that filters down to every single division of football, going to, like, you could go to Northwest Counties division and if they're still playing the rest of the season, but they can't get promoted because four or five leagues above them, you don't have any promotion or relegation. So it's much bigger than just the Premier League. Yep. And it's difficult for me to sit here now and say I think that they'll do this, that and the other. I think it depends on what happens really in the coming weeks and months. If they've said this date in April that is the sort of the benchmark that we're looking at the minute to come back, but I've seen other reports that the people can't see football coming back to them because we might be in a place where we can't have social gatherings in just general public and stuff. So I think the Premier League season probably will be finished, but whether that's in summer, then there's ramifications of the Euro, stuff like that. So it's just a one that I don't think anyone can really predict at the minute.
Is it even a case, and this is personally my feeling, that even if the Premier League doesn't get underway again until September, October, you finish this season no matter what, close the book on that, and then if you can have a season next season, do it, or if not, you skip that, or you have a 19-game season, then maybe you don't award a Premier League title, whatever. I just don't think, with all the money that has been spent by sponsors, TV channels, but more importantly by fans getting to games, people investing. Look what Liverpool have done. Norwich have got a few games. They think they can win and stay up. But I just think no matter what happens, first things first, you finish this season. That absolutely has to be done to maintain the integrity of football.
Yeah, and look, as a United fan, watching this season and seeing Liverpool go on to possibly win the title has been hard. And I'm not saying for 1 minute that I'd love to see them win the league, but it's important that you do finish the season, I think. And look, like, we've still got our own goals. We're in three competitions still, the Europa League, obviously FA Cup and Premier League as well. So you think that, do you know what I mean? We actually want to go for our own trophies as well this season and try and get a bit of silverware. Mm. And obviously get that Champions League football as well. So I think yes, but then again, you look at like Ighalo, his contract is only a loan for a season. That finishes in what, end of May, June? What happens if we continue the season in July and then half the teams haven't got half the players that are contracted this season? So I'd love to say I think it should be completed, but I think it's going to be a case of, if we're not able to get it back up and running by June, July, August, then we might see it just binned off altogether.
Let's talk about Manchester United. I mean, you mentioned, of course, Bruno Fernandes. And he's been absolutely superb. Looks like he's one of these football players who looks like a glider. Do you know what I mean? He kind of moves around as if he's on wheels almost. Luka Modric style, those players that seem to get in between the lines almost effortlessly. How big a transformation, as somebody who watches every minute of Manchester United's games, has Bruno wrought on that team?
Oh, it's been a world of difference. And look, it's been something we've been crying out for. I was picking up Bruno Fernandes this time last year and saying he's the player we should be signing in the summer, because we just needed that extra bit of creativity in midfield to go alongside even Pogba, that was obviously playing at the time, that we just needed that link up between the midfield and the attack. And he's just made a world of difference to this team. I look at it and I think, in terms of signings and the impact they've had on the way we play, the team itself, and just going straight into that team, I can't think of a signing since Fergie bought Van Persie into the team. I can't think of a player that's had this much impact on a United side, because he's come in and you've got to say now he's the first name on the team sheet. He's got to be playing every match. But he's, the attitude that he's brought is what's good to see. When you watch the game and see it on the pitch, it's the fact that he makes everyone around him play better and up their tempo as well. He's demanding more of players around him. You look at the likes of Matic and Fred and McTominay, they've all upped the game now because they're playing in that midfield with Bruno. And that's amazing that he's come in this side. He doesn't know any of them, apart from the likes of Dalot, maybe from international duty. He doesn't know any of the United players from his time at Sporting. And he's come in and he just instantly has taken that on, that leadership in the team. He's not the captain, but he's got that sort of makeup in him. And I think that's almost as important. Look, he's a world-class player, and what he does with the football is massive. But away from that, just the impact he has around the whole team. And you can imagine the impact he has in the dressing room as well. That's just vital.
Is he there to play with Paul Pogba or to replace Paul Pogba, do you think?
I think, look, Ollie's come out, hasn't he, in the past week or so and said that he sees Paul staying at the club, but I just can't see it. I think, to be honest, I think he's been brought in, I think possibly at the top of the club, and Ollie himself see it as a midfield with Paul Pogba. I think that is the dream scenario from their point of view, to get Pogba playing again, to have a midfield with Bruno and Pogba in the same midfield. And do you know what? That could happen, and if it did happen, it would be a hell of a midfield. But I think the likelihood is that whatever goes on this season, and if we finish it or not, and the transfer window in the summer, I think we will see Pogba shipped out, and I think you'd see someone like, I'm just pulling a name out here, but Jadon Sancho, that we've been linked with, to come in and replace Pogba as that figurehead of the ideal marketing type of player that Ed Woodward seems to like.
Let's talk about Jadon Sancho as well. I mean, I look at that Manchester United, well, I suppose, front four, five, what would it be now? So potentially you're playing Marcus Rashford, Anthony Martial, Jadon Sancho fitting in there somewhere. Pogba, whether he's there or not, sitting in behind Bruno Fernandes, whether Regalo's contract gets extended or if it's Mason Greenwood. I mean, do you think Sancho is the man you need? I know that sounds like a stupid thing to say because he's such a good player, but is that the player that you need to sign?
I think 100%. I think our team is still crying out for a right winger. I think when you look at it, and I think we have been for a few seasons now, we've tried people there. We've tried the likes of Rashford and Martial there at times, but they're both better either up front or coming in from the left. And I think, although Dan James has proved to be a decent player this season, he's a player that, do you know what, he needs time to grow. He needs time to be in the team and to be afforded to be out the team as well and be rested sometimes, which I think he's needed this season, but we haven't been able to give him that time. So I think Sancho, look, you look at his numbers this season, the way he's playing for Dortmund, and he's up there with the best in the world, mm-hmm. right? In terms of his output, his assists, his goals, is phenomenal for his age. And I think he is, from all points of view, from a fan's point of view, from a way that we want to be going, we want to be signing young players with potential, and his English as well seems to fit into all this sort of plan that he's going with transfers. He's got that marketability, so the people at the top, the board level, Ed Woodward, they get the shirt sales, they'll be happy, give him the number seven and make him the sort of United poster boy if you want to ship Pogba off. But I think he's the one player that, now we've got that Bruno role sorted in midfield, that Sancho on the right-hand side, and you think of a front three of Martial, Rashford and Sancho with Bruno in behind, and that sounds unstoppable to me.
Manchester United fans, how does that sound to you? At Love Sport Radio, 0208 70 25 58. Give us a ring or send us a WhatsApp message. We'll still be here with the Manchester United Fan Show in a few moments.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Good evening, it's me, Joe Forrester, here on Love Sport Radio. You can have your say at Love Sport Radio on social media. Give us a bell or send us a WhatsApp message, 0208 70 25 58. Eight. Still here with Ben Senior talking all things Manchester United. It is, of course, the Manchester United fan show. We're going to be joined as well by Jay Motti. I understand as well, Jay, that apparently there's some issues with noise potentially in your household this evening. We've got a few fans watching on.
yeah, there might be a couple of little people that need to be going to sleep very soon. but they're all right. They're good as gold.
So your kids are watching. How can they go to sleep when the Manchester United fan show's on, though? It's too exciting.
yeah, it is. This is the problem I have, you see, getting them to bed before 9 o'clock on a Sunday is a nightmare.
right, listen. Listen, Jay, let me ask you. So we were just talking Bruno Fernandes. Ben saying what an amazing difference he's made on and off the pitch at Manchester United. Do you think that he's there to play with Paul Pogba or to play instead of Paul Pogba?
It pains me to say it, but I think he's there to play instead of Paul Pogba. Listen, I would love to see Paul Pogba and Bruno Fernandes line up together for many years to come. I think we can have both of them in the team. I think you don't need to have two holding midfielders. You could have those two and one holding midfielder, be that Matic, Fred or McTominay. And I think before the end of the season, we may well see that set up. But I think if we're being brutally honest, despite some of the noises that are coming out from the Paul Pogba camp, that he may be sort of close to signing a new deal, I think Bruno Fernandes was always brought in as a replacement for Paul Pogba. I think that's one of the reasons perhaps we didn't bring him in earlier. And I think it's a bit of a shame because I would love to see those two line up. And I think that midfield of having those two and one of the other players I mentioned would be a mouth-watering prospect for any United fan. But my only hope now is whenever the season does resume that we get to see them playing to the end of the season. And then when Paul Pogba does go, I think in the summer or whenever it is, it's going to be very soon, that by that time, we've achieved Champions League football. Because I think if you've got those two in your team, you can do.
Let me ask you as well, Jay. There's the talk of a fire sale whenever the transfer window does happen at Manchester United. Marcus Rojo on his way out the door. I know he's on loan at Estudiantes at the moment. Alexis Sanchez, who's obviously on loan at Inter Milan. Those two going on permanent deals, we think. Paul Pogba being another one. Jesse Lingard and David De Gea. Do you think those are players that potentially we could see leave?
I think all those players you mentioned, we could see leave. I think the one that sort of sticks out the most there is David De Gea. I mean, he's been our player of the season. Is it 4 out of the last 6 years? I might be wrong there. Something ridiculous anyway for a goalkeeper. He's been one of our only world-class players at times. But I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't be that gutted if David De Gea moved on. And I know I'm going to get pelters for this of a lot of United fans. And like, listen, I'm not forgetting what the man has done for this club. He's been, as I said earlier, a world-class player. He could have moved on a few years ago and he didn't, for whatever reasons, whether it's a dodgy fax machine or that he decided to stay, whatever the reasons you want to look at it, he stuck with us when, by rights, a player of his calibre should have been challenging for Premier League titles and for Champions Leagues or league titles in a different country. But I think with Dean Henderson and even Sergio Romero, who I actually rate quite highly, I think you've got two very good goalkeepers there. And I think David De Gea, and I've said this quite a few times on the channel, the YouTube channel that I'm on, that I don't think David De Gea, since Spurs away last season, ironically, at Wembley, I don't think he's been that consistent. I think if you look, I used to be able to name you David De Gea's mistakes on one hand for the course of his career. Now, if you think about it, back end of last season, he had a bit of a nightmare in the derby. He had a bit of a shocker against Arsenal. At the Nou Camp, he let in a goal under his body. Chelsea parried an easy shot for, I think, was it Rudiger, that more or less ended our top four hopes. You look at this season, Crystal Palace, Watford, Everton at home. There's been, well, Everton away as well, there's been sort of at least half a dozen times this season alone where you can look at David De Gea and think he should have done better there, or he's made a mistake. And the back end of last season as well, probably another half a dozen times. For a player of his calibre, that's ridiculous. So I think, I don't know, something doesn't seem quite right for me with David De Gea. I know the last few weeks, barring the Everton game, he's been a little bit better and his clean sheet record is quite good. But I just wonder if this is getting towards the end of the road now for David De Gea and Manchester United. And I think it might be the right time, for both parties. I think with Dean Henderson coming through the ranks and obviously doing bits at Sheffield United, arguably England's best goalkeeper at the minute, and also Sergio Romero as a great number one or backup option, I think it wouldn't be that bad for anyone, for all concerned, if David De Gea moved on.
Ben, what do you make of that? David De Gea out, potentially Dean Henderson coming back from his loan period at Sheffield United and taking the number one spot at Manchester United.
Yeah, I think, look, Dean Henderson has had a brilliant season, so have Chef Hugh this season. And I think he is a prospect. He's a player that I would love to see as the United number one in the future. Whether that's next season, I'm just not sure. I think De Gea, I hear what Jay's saying. He hasn't really been the same. You sort of look at the 2018 World Cup and pre and post that, and he hasn't quite been the same player since he dipped in form with the national team as well. And you've sort of seen that in a United shirt this season a bit. But I do think it's important to note that as a United goalkeeper and a United player in general, I think you do get more scrutiny than anyone else, because as I've seen in the latest games, look, he's made mistakes, but he does save us as well. He does make top draw saves. And look, Dean Henderson has made mistakes for Sheffield United this season. He's been called out by Chris Wilder a number of times to say that actually he should be doing better. So I think it's important that, look, I don't think David De Gea is in the best form of his life. Whether he can regain that or not remains to be seen, but I think it might be just a little bit too soon to pull the plug on him. And just seeing, I think he is still a world-class goalkeeper. I would put him up there with the top between 5 and 10 keepers in the world. So I think I'd stick with him for again next season, and then after that, I think then you're looking to bring Dean Henderson into the frame.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's certainly having a superb season at Sheffield United. But as you say, I mean, Chris Wilder is one of those managers, I suppose, that is, how should we say it, quite forthcoming in his opinions, good or bad. But that's what young players need quite a lot of the time, I think. Jay, let me ask you, we've been talking obviously about coronavirus, about the way it affects the season. Manchester United sitting in fifth at the moment, which of course would be good enough for Champions League qualification. How do you think things should or can be resolved here? Do we have Leeds and West Brom come up, but no relegation, and we have a 22-team Premier League season? What on earth does that mean for teams further down the pyramid? I mean, it looks like the Euros are definitely going to get moved. Is that the right call? What do we do when player contracts come up for renewal on the 30th of June? I mean, how do you see us getting out of this mess?
I mean, listen, it'll take someone far more intelligent than I to work out this mess. I can give you my opinion and that's it. I mean, I think the sort of, for me, now the logical sort of explanation or answer would be to either postpone the Euros, if feasible, for a year or to move them back to the sort of back end of the summer. I don't know if any of those scenarios could even work. But I think trying to finish the season, whether that be behind closed doors or with fans back in the stadium, is the ideal answer. If it means pushing the season back so the season ends in the middle of June rather than the end of May, then so be it. But if that can't happen, if that is off the table, and if this the coronavirus isn't, you know, we're not in a position where we can have football matches again until much longer and we have to make a decision about ending the season, then I don't know how it's fair. Because listen, this isn't just a Manchester United fan saying don't promote Leeds United because I don't like Leeds. It's just the Championship for starters. I mean, you can argue that Liverpool have walked the league, and whatever you do at the end of the league, you can say, well, if you give them the title, they were going to win it anyway. And I sort of understand that. But in the Championship, it's so tight. Things can change. We've seen it so many seasons, especially when you talk about the playoffs and things like that. And to sort of deny a club or a team, just say, right, well, this is it. This is how it's going to end, when there was so much football left to play, just seems a little bit unfair. So one, your answer there about expanding the league, yes, it is a solution. But I think ideally now, we just have to, or we have to try and see if it is feasible to finish the Premier League and the Championship, just move the Euros, whether that's 2021 or to the back end of the summer, whichever way it is. That, for me, would be the ideal scenario, because, I don't know, it just seems grossly unfair. And from a United point of view, you know, we're sitting in fifth, and if you were to say, right, you're finishing fifth, I don't have any faith in the idea that fifth is going to give you Champions League football. I know there's other stuff going on with City, but we don't know how that's going to end up. So you could end up with saying, right, fifth isn't Champions League football. You're not going in the Champions League next season. And right now, that would seem unfair to me as a United fan, because I think we're in good form. I think you look at our form for the last sort of 2 months, we're the informed team out of the ones fighting for top four, even more so than the likes of Leicester and Chelsea. And I was feeling pretty confident that Manchester United could get into the top four. I really did. So to end the season in fifth and not have Champions League football, unless, you know, whatever goes on with City goes on, for me would seem grossly unfair.
How hard do you think it is for the players? I mean, these guys are training at home, on their own. I'm guessing they've been given, this might sound horribly out of date, a DVD or a USB. I don't know. I'm training. I don't know. I don't know what the kids are using. I did say earlier, tape. It's almost certainly not a tape.
I say that. Yeah. You tape that for me.
They've sent a VHS round to their houses. But I mean, these guys training on their own, surely if we come back in 3 weeks' time, they're not going to be match sharp, are they? It's not the same as training with your team. I mean, that, and for a team like Manchester United, Jay, that might derail you in terms of your form.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you could argue, well, everyone's got the same problems, but that doesn't make it right, does it? I mean, we saw it with Odion Ighalo. He went into a sort of quarantine, for want of a better word, where he was training on his own and he was sort of in the gym. Then he had a bit of training, and you've seen the progression with him. I know he was coming back into a much higher level than the league he'd come from, but you could see how game by game he got fitter and he got more up to speed. Players are going to take time, and you know, you don't want to have a scenario where you're saying, I know I've just said, we need to finish the league, but you want to finish the league when players are ready. Because what we don't want to see is, for want of a better expression, 22 men knackered, bumbling around for 90 minutes because they're completely unfit and not match prepared. You also don't want to be in a position where you've got one or two players who might not be available because they're recovering from catching the coronavirus. Yeah. Because we've seen it already. Some players, I think, was it Callum Hudson-Odoi was one of them who's caused it. Obviously, Arteta as well. Now, you know, they're on the mend, but players, you know, it obviously takes a lot out of your body. If any of the players have contracted it, they're going to have to take a little bit longer than some of the teammates to get ready. So that's going to affect teams, squads, setup, tactics, all sorts. So, yeah, you don't want to be in a position where you say, right, just get the league done, just throw players into it and let's just get these matches played. You want a position where you say, right, OK, players have had enough time to train, they're ready, managers are happy, coaches are happy, let's do this. I mean, this is all obviously ideal scenarios, and with something like this, we're unlikely to get any sort of perfect scenario or ending that keeps everyone happy. So, yeah, it is difficult. But that's the problem you've got, is because it's the great unknown. We've never known anything like this. And this isn't a case of one team having one issue. It's the entire leagues all having unknown issues because they won't know which players are fit and which aren't.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, it's been great chatting to you, Ben. Ben's got to leave us now, but I'm going to be back with Jay in a few moments' time, and we'll be hearing from Ben Thornley when he spoke to Love Sport Radio a little bit earlier.
Giving your team a voice, Love Sport Radio.
Good evening, it is 8:30. Me, Joe Forrester, here on the Manchester United Fan Show, joined by Jay Motti. Andy Hodgson was talking to Ben Thornley a little bit earlier on. Ben Thornley, of course, former Manchester United player, and he was out in Austria for Manchester United's Europa League fixture against LASK. Andy asked him first off whether he thought he was even going to make it to Austria.
It was a strange scenario. As we all gathered at the airport to take the charter plane out there, and obviously the team would do that, you know, a couple of hours later. We got a call from one of our organisers to say that most of the crew that were assembled at Manchester Airport ready to fly out were not going to be needed to travel. And it ended up with just myself, Stuart Gardner, my co-commentator, a cameraman and a photographer. And we were the only people on a chartered plane plus some security. So it was a 200-seater plane, and there were 14 of us on it in the end. And even when we got there, there was still a case for the games not being played. But then we got the announcement that the teams that had already made their trips to the destinations, obviously that would have been all of them, the games were actually going to go ahead. So we commentated on the game on Thursday night and then came back straight away to all the news breaking with the you know, various different clubs having their outbreak of it. So it was a very, very strange scenario on top of an already eerie LASK Lint Stadium that didn't contain any fans.
Well, I was going to say, when you arrived, there was a crowd of, 500 people. What was it like for the players then? Was it odd, or was it just like a training experience?
Well, I mean, you would obviously have to speak to them, because it's something that none of them would have experienced before, I wouldn't have thought. And certainly it's never happened to me in a game of such magnitude. I mean, I know we're only talking about a last 16 of the Europa League, but, you know, there's a, you know, a lot riding on it still. It's progressing through to the quarterfinal for LASK, who, you know, a few years ago were in the third tier of the Austrian league. It was their, you know, their game of the century, if you like. And we know that they have very, very vociferous support, and they moved the game to this ground that held a few more people, because their ground only contains can hold 6,000 people. And it turned out in the end that they didn't actually need to move it. So yeah, it was very, very strange. It was difficult to commentate on at times, because when you are playing a game and when you are commentating on a game, obviously the atmosphere from the fans around is projected through to the people that are not in the stadium and watching it on the TV. And it's very, very difficult. I mean, United scored 5 goals, and it's very, very difficult to sort of get across what it was like inside the stadium. I mean, normally people would have been going berserk. The 700 United fans would have been over the moon to see us score 5 goals in a competition that we've struggled to score goals in away from home this season. But we put on a 5-star showing, and there was nobody there to see it. It was very, very surreal, very surreal.
Well, a 5-star showing, as you say. Was that because Man United were brilliant or LASK were a bit rubbish?
I think it's more of the latter. I have certainly seen United play better than that and score nowhere near 5 goals in recent times. But barring the fifth goal, which was a bit of a farce from the goalkeeper letting it slip under his hand, we did actually score some terrific goals. Odion Ighalo's goal was terrific. The goal that Wan-Mata scored, he made and then took a brilliant pass through the centre for Fred, and he slotted it all nicely. We scored some really good goals, but in all fairness, LASK that were, you know, are leading the Austrian division. And, you know, when you think that they're ahead of the likes of Red Bull Salzburg, who've got money and have only just seen Haaland and Minamino leave, then they weren't to be taken lightly. But unfortunately, most of that was talk, because on the pitch they didn't really offer anything at all. And certainly going forward, the quality was very poor.
Well, one who showed a lot of quality is Bruno Fernandes, involved in more goals up to that stage on Thursday night than any other player in the Europa League this season, and a man of the match performance as well.
Yeah, the ball that he played to find Odion Ighalo for the first goal. I mean, credit to Ighalo, the way he sort of juggled it on the edge of the area and then managed to find a terrific shot. But Fernandes, just prior to that, it was a wonderful turn. He did get a little bit of luck along the way, but he still had the presence of mind as somebody came to close him down to sort of volley it with the outside of his right foot into the path of Odion Ighalo on the edge of the box. And that is something that we've been missing, is somebody with his vision and his skill to execute those sorts of passes and create goals, not just for himself, but obviously for others. And he has been an absolute revelation since he's arrived at the football club.
Well, in other news this week, Man United's had bad news off the pitch with 500 million wiped off United's value on the US stock market. Does any of that stuff affect the players and the day-to-day running of Man United, or is that all at board level, do you think?
Well, I'm assuming that is all at board level. I mean, it's obviously, when you're talking about, you know, £500 million, it's an extortionate amount of money that any huge company is still going to miss. But I think the players have got no control over that. Obviously, we've got no control over the situation that society is enduring at the moment with this terrible virus that is sweeping through the entire world. The lads just have to be focused on what their job in hand is.
Former Man United player Ben Thornley was with the club between 93 and 98, still involved in terms of the commentary, and travelled on Thursday night with them as well. Many thanks. It's Andy Hodgson kicking off on Love Sport Radio till 4 o'clock today.
Yep, that's when Ben Thornley spoke to Andy Hodgson earlier on Love Sport Radio. Remember, you can have your say at Love Sport Radio if you want to get in touch on social media. Give us a ring or send us a WhatsApp message, 0208 70 20 558. It's me, Joe Forrester, here with Jay Motti. It is the Manchester United fan show. Jay, Ben was talking about Manchester United's performance against LASK or LASK or whatever you want to call them out there in Austria. Five different scorers. What did you make of the performance?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to gauge sort of how well we played when the opposition was relatively poor on the night, at least. But you've got to be happy with that. I mean, obviously, it's a 5-0 win in Europe away from home, and they're not exactly growing on trees, those sorts of results. Mm. I was pleased. It's good to see certain scorers score. Dan James has had a little bit of grief, a loss of form since that early start in his United career when he was just absolutely flying. So it's great to see him get a goal. Andres Pereira, another one who's been heavily criticised recently. His performances haven't been good enough. So it was great to see him get, okay, you know, the keeper should have done better, but a goal's a goal. And Odion Ighalo with an absolute screamer. He's loving life at Manchester United. And you know what? I was one of the ones, I think me and you spoke at the time when we signed him, and I was a bit sceptical of whether he's what we need or whether he'd be good enough. And I'll hold my hands up and say he's just been an absolute breath of fresh air. He's been great. You know, not just what he's done on the pitch, but the way he's embraced Manchester United. He loves the fact that he signed for Manchester United. He's a massive United fan, and he wears his heart on his sleeve in that respect. And the fans have really took to that. They get it. You know, it feels like you've got one of your own there when he's scoring. Do you know what I mean? When he's doing well, because he's such a massive red. So, yeah. And as you've already mentioned, Bruno Fernandes just keeps getting better. And if you're playing a team that out of the race, he's going to punish you. And that's what he did on Thursday night. He just absolutely, you know, tore LASK apart.
Steady improvement of Luke Shaw as well. Keeps looking better and better. He's almost put the ghost of Jose Mourinho to bed, you feel?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've been one of Luke Shaw's fiercest critics. I still felt, and I still feel a little bit like he's not quite at the levels he was before he got injured against PSV all those years ago. I thought before that, he was absolutely flying. He's one of our best players. And I think since then, he's been a little bit inconsistent. I think, yes, he has had a marked improvement. He's playing well. I still think there's little defensive issues that he needs to iron out. Just, I might be, again, being overly critical, but sometimes he gets cut out of position a little bit. And I would like to see him get forward a little bit quicker sometimes as well. But he has improved a lot. You're right, and the sort of the Jose days where Jose was singling him out week in, week out, saying all sorts of quite quite harsh criticism as well from a manager to say about a player. And Luke Shaw, to be fair, he didn't put in a transfer request or fold. He stuck at it and he's kept at it. And he seems to benefit now from... Only deserves a little bit of credit with some of these players. You know, he's found a system and a way to get the best out of Luke Shaw, or almost the best out of Luke Shaw, I should say, when many other people would have said, all right, just give it Brandon Williams and, you know, move Luke Shaw on or just drop him. So it's going well at the minute. And I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, with Luke Shaw and with one or two others as well who've improved over the last few months, deserves a bit of credit because he tends to stick with certain players. You know, he stuck with Fred when many of us thought is Fred the answer. He's put Martial down in that number nine role and stuck him there and stuck with him when many people thought Romelu Lukaku might be the answer. So I think it's time to give Ole Gunnar Solskjaer a bit of credit as well.
Does it finally look like Ollie's plans are coming to fruition? As you say, people were quite harsh in him. I think they kind of look back at his time in Norway and they look at him at Cardiff and they go, oh, it's not much of a CV. And actually, they already wrote him off before he actually had a chance to put his ideas into practice.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this a million times. I felt the thing with Ollie is he suffered a little bit from the start he had because he had such an amazing start that everyone thought, oh, we've cracked it here. We're good enough to challenge for a league title. We're good enough to get into the Champions League and we don't need to make any signings and everything's rosy. And it wasn't. All that happened is Ole came in at a time when the players were at rock bottom. He lifted him up. He put Paul Pogba back in the team and we went on that amazing run. But there was still a lot of work to do. I mean, you spoke earlier about getting rid of Deadwood. We've already got rid of, what was it, five or six players in the last two transfer windows. And you've named another five that could be moving on. I mean, that's practically a team. Do you know what I mean? And he's still not finished. But I feel like, whereas in the first sort of 12, 13 games under Ole, when we're doing really well, it was very short term. It was like a burst. Here now, it seems to be a little bit more long term. His plans seem to be a lot long term plans are coming to fruition. You look at the likes of Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who's come in, the system that he's adopted defensively. Again, that seems to work in. Is it eight or nine clean sheets out of the last 11 games or something? I think we've got one of the best clean sheet records in Europe, which amazed me because it sort of came from nowhere. That's that. But these are all sort of long-term plans that you see. The way he's handled Brandon Williams, the way he's handled Mason Greenwood. I think it would be a real shame if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer didn't stick around and wasn't given the chance to make this work, because I feel that he is getting things right. Some of the results, me and you have spoken many times on a Sunday night, haven't been good enough. You know, losing away at Newcastle, West Ham, Watford, at home to Palace, and Berlin, you know, I don't need to go through them all, but we've had a lot of results this season where we've been like, that isn't good enough for Manchester United. But on the whole, I think when you look at his United career as manager in its entirety, he's moving the club in the right direction. He's doing the tough decisions that need to be made. He's nurturing the youngsters that need to be nurtured. He's sticking with the players, including Nemanja Matic, let's not forget, who everyone had thought was done at United. And he's getting a tune out of him. And I think there's a real positivity about United that, dare I say, almost feels like those Ollie's at the wheel days. So I'd love to see him be given a chance because I think he's earned it.
We mentioned Deadwood, and I don't want to be unkind to specific players, but another player who looks like he could be on his way out the door is the man that Alex Ferguson said arguably could be our best ever player. He was talking about Phil Jones. He said, I think Phil Jones may be one of the best players we've ever had, no matter where we play him. At 21 years of age, he's going to be a phenomenal player. I think he can play anywhere on the pitch. Fast forward to 28 years of age. To say he hasn't fulfilled his potential, I think, would be an understatement. What's gone wrong for Phil Jones?
Well, for starters, listen, I love Sir Alex Ferguson as much as I love my own children, but that was one of the most ridiculous statements I think the great man has ever said. To say that Phil Jones was going to be one of our greatest ever players is just absolute, it's nonsense, and I don't know what Fergie was thinking when he came out with that one. The thing with Phil Jones, I mean, going back to his Blackburn days, I used to work as a reporter in Blackburn, and he was a bit of a revelation there. He was like this 18-year-old playing week in, week out, helping to keep them in the Premier League. At one point, everyone thought he was amazing. Came to United, did okay, did well. Was seen as a sort of heir apparent, really, to Nemanja Vidic, I think. I think it was thought that him and Smalling would form a defensive partnership, or maybe Johnny Evans, that would take over from Rio and Vidic. And it just never happened. And the problem with Phil Jones is he can't, you know, he's had a lot of games for Manchester United. He's had a lot of good games. People forget that. But he's one of those players where, when he's bad, it can be shocking. And you can think, you know, this isn't good enough. He's got a clumsy way about him at times that doesn't exactly endear him to you. So, I mean, you mentioned that he's going to go, I think, Newcastle, 12 million.
12
I mean,
million quid, yeah.
Sorry?
12 million quid to Newcastle, 12, it looks like, yeah.
12 million quid, which, yeah, you know, getting money for Phil Jones seems great. But it's weird because, you know, don't forget, you mentioned earlier about the 2018 World Cup. Phil Jones went to that World Cup, You know, he's not been a complete disaster at Manchester United. He's sort of revisionist now. Revision theory, oh, Phil Jones has always been shocking. He hasn't. He's played a lot of games. He's won a title. He's won the FA Cup. He's won the League Cup. You know, he's done okay in terms of his career, but he hasn't, as you asked, lived up to the expectations. I think it was unfair if you say what he said anyway. But even without that comment, we expected more from Phil Jones. I thought he was going to be a future England regular and a future Manchester United regular, and he never quite got there. They always seem to be. You'd have three or four good games out of Phil Jones, and then he'd do something that made you question why he was a professional footballer. And I think it's best if he does move on, I think, for all concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't put it better myself. Listen, the Manchester United fan show is going to be with you until 9 p.m. Myself and Jay Motti, you can get in touch at Love Sport Radio. Give us a ring or send us a WhatsApp. 0208 70 2558.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
Good evening, it is the Manchester United fan show on Love Sport Radio. Me, Joe Forrester, here with Jay Motti. We've been talking all things Manchester United. You can have your say at Love Sport Radio on social media. Give us a ring or send us a WhatsApp message, 0208 70 20 558. We've talked a lot about the players who might be on their way out of Manchester United. Marcus Rojo, Alexis Sanchez, of course, David De Gea, maybe Jesse Lingard, Phil Jones. The list goes on. But in terms of players on their way in, the Birmingham Mail is reporting that Manchester United are going to be in heavily for Jack Grealish come the transfer window when it does happen. Jay, is Grealish the sort of player you need?
Do you know what? He really won me over, Jack Grealish, when he came to Old Trafford with Villa. I'd always been a little bit on the fence with him. I thought he might be sort of one of those 1 in 4 or 1 in 3 type players who, you know, very inconsistent, but when he's good, he's great, and then goes missing. But I saw that lad get kicked absolutely all over the pitch. I mean, you saw the game.
Yep.
It just seemed we targeted him and just said, right, let's just kick him. And he just kept getting up. He kept shrugging off challenges. He rolled challenges. He had a real grit to him. And obviously, the skills as well. He scored an absolute worldie. And I thought, you know what? He looks like the sort of player we need. And I don't think he'd shirk that challenge. I think he'd come into United with a little bit of confidence and swagger. You know, like we've seen from Bruno, where he's come in and he's like, you know, this is me. I should be here. I belong here. He's got his head up. He's not sort of been overawed by it all. And I see that sort of attitude in Grealish. And I think that he could fit into our team as well. I mean, we were speaking earlier about Paul Pogba moving on. And Paul Pogba moves on. I don't see Jack Grealish sort of being a like-for-like replacement, because we already mentioned Bruno Fernandes and all like that. But I think you can have a scenario where you have, he can maybe play as part of a front three. You have a 4-3-3. He can play off the striker, or he can drop a bit deeper and play as a midfielder. I think there's positions there for him at Manchester United, and he looks like the type of player that the crowd would love, that would do a great job, that would move this team forward. And I think if you throw him into this side, one thing United have had a little bit more of recently is, I think, he's that little bit of fear factor where teams are like, you know what, United are at the races here. You've got, you know, Martial's banging him in. You've got Bruno Fernandes pulling the strings. It's not the United of maybe a few months ago, where teams were sort of feeling cocky or confident against us. And I think you throw Grealish into that, I think it adds to that. I think United could be a real force to be reckoned with him in the team. So I'd love to see him at United, I really would.
I suppose people will be listening and thinking, well, where's the balance to that midfield in terms of who's doing the defensive work? Would it be Fred? Would it be McTominay? Or do you think that's a position that Ollie might look to buy in as well?
I think you've got options there. You mentioned Fred and McTominay. Those are the two main options. This is the big thing that I've always gone on about. I've probably bored our viewers on the YouTube channel with. Is this idea that you have to have two holding midfielders. I just don't get it, right? If you've got quality midfielders, you don't need to keep having two holding midfielders at Manchester United. It's a real bugbear of mine. I've seen United set up with two holding midfielders against the likes of Bournemouth, against the likes of Burnley, against the likes of Newcastle, and lose. And it just makes no sense to me. If you've got midfield, say for example, you know, Grealish comes in and he's a midfield. We play him in midfield alongside Bruno with Fred behind him. That's a strong midfield.
Yep.
And let's not forget, both Grealish and Bruno like to drop deep. They don't just linger around near the other end of the pitch. They'll come deep and pick up balls. They'll stick a challenge in now and again when they need to. So you've got an actually quite robust mobile midfield there. So yes, you have one player, be that Fred McTominay, maybe even Nemanja Matic, who's in a great bit of form, sitting in front of the defence. And then you have the likes of Bruno, who's a little bit more box-to-box, and maybe Grealish is more attacking. But it works. There's a balance there. Just don't buy into this idea that you have to have two players in front of your defence. Why do you spend £85 million on a defender who can carry the ball out of defence, if you're going to stick two players in front of him. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I absolutely agree with you. And if you think of the really great teams, I mean, that Guardiola Barcelona team, for example, I know it's apples and oranges, but Iniesta, Xavi and Busquets in behind. I mean, why do you necessarily need to prioritise defensive football? I think if Jose Mourinho at Spurs is proving anything, it's that the defensive football's maybe had its day.
Exactly. This was I might be wrong here, but I remember this coming in with Rafa Benitez, I think, was a big advocate of those two holding midfielders. I think, was it Alonso Mascherano he had?
Yeah.
And he had some success with it. He won the Champions League, and I think his Haman as well used to slot into that role, and he had other options there, Lucas Leiva or whoever. But he always had those two, didn't he? And then everyone adopted, you mentioned Jose, he was a big fan of it, and it became the sort of in vogue thing. But like you mentioned, I know, I get where you're coming from. You know, I'm not going to sit and go, oh, Bruno and Pogba or Bruno and Grealish and Xavi and Iniesta, but whatever. But it's the same sort of thing. Mm. You've got two midfielders that, A, can get up and down the pitch. Yes, they're attacking, but they like to do, you know, they can control the tempo of the game and whatnot with the ball. You only need one who's going to sit and just stay in front of the defence. Now, that player has to be a very good one. I'm not disputing that. You can't just stick anyone in there who's out of form and just say, oh, just sit in front of the defence. It's easier. You need a very good, strong defensive midfielder there. Busquets was the ideal one. Michael Carrick-type player is another one who, you know, can read the game. And I know those players don't grow on trees. But you look at the form that Fred's in. He's doing exceptionally well this season. I think he's surprised a lot of us. Look at how Matic has come back into the team. I think if you put either of those two, or even Scott McTominay, in front of the defence, and as we've mentioned, you had Bruno and Pogba, or Bruno and Grealish, or Bruno and Maddison, he's another one we've been linked with, that type of scenario, I think that midfield works. I do, but I don't think you're going to suddenly find Manchester United being overrunning midfield and conceding loads of goals. I just don't see it happening. I think if anything, it's going to be the other way around. I think you're going to have a nice sort of mobile attacking midfield that teams are scared of, and that links up well with your front three.
How far are Manchester United off being able to compete with Liverpool?
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because I'm damned if I do and I'm damned if I don't want to ever say this. I've been dragged into these arguments. And, you know, when you say you are confident in yourself, we're not that far off. People say, if you've seen the league table with 30-odd points, are you absolutely deluded? But I think you have to look at player for player. The thing for me now, Manchester United, for our first 11, I don't think we're that far off. I'll be honest with you. Marcus Rashford comes back. Anthony Martial, you may be by someone else. Maybe we've been linked with a Jadon Sancho. I know these aren't exactly players that are cheap. Mm. But if, say, we brought in Sancho and you had a front three of Martial, Rashford, Sancho, maybe Grealish comes in and replaces, you know, Pogba goes. You have the midfield we've spoken about and the defence that we've already got and the goalkeeper we've already got, be that Dean Henderson or David De Gea. I think that's a very strong 11. I think that is probably a title challenging 11. The issue you've got is when you get one or two injuries, that's where we fall short. Because I see Liverpool, I know they've not had the greatest bit of form recently. I think they've lost a couple of games out of last five, which for them is terrible. But they've got options. They've got different players to come in. You know, Divock Origi comes in if one of the front three gets injured, and obviously he does quite well for him. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain or Juan Alden, or you know, they've got options in midfield that don't have to always start necessarily, but he'll mix it up a little bit. We don't really have that, and I think the problem is this season we've seen how our second string, when the fourth to become our first string, aren't good enough. You know, we had one or two injuries. Dan James was playing every week and he shouldn't have been. You know, Andreas Pereira playing every week and he shouldn't have been. And the other option to him was Jesse Lingard, who's in the worst form of his life. So that's the problem we've got. It's not the 11 for me. I think we're one or two signings away from having an 11 that could challenge with a... I think that... Oh. ...to lose a Bruno for a chunk of the season or an Anthony Martial, then you're in real trouble. So that's where I think you need more. I think we need more signings. So in answer to your question, I think probably four or five signings away from being up to where Liverpool are.
Well, there we go. Flog those five players in the summer. Get Jadon Sancho in. It's a start.
It's a start. Listen, we all knew, didn't we? I mean, we knew you were speaking a few weeks ago. We always said it was going to be a long process. This wasn't going to be a 1-2 transfer window job. We were that far behind when Ollie came in. It was going to take at least three or four transfer windows to get us challenging again. Now, we've had, since Ollie came in, you can't really count the first one in January because he was still caretaker. He didn't get to do anything in that other than let Marouane Fellaini move out. He's had one in the summer. He's had one in January, which I think have been good transfer windows. Mm. I think the players he's brought in have been very good. Would you know, if we could go back in time, I think we'd make all those signings again. I think we would. And he got rid of a lot of the players that we need to get rid of. Even the players that at the time you looked at and you thought, you know, I was gutted that Ander Herrera left. But we seem to be all right without him at the minute, which is it's pleasing. So I think if you get another couple of transfer windows, I think we can start getting there. I think the main thing now for United is just to look at getting into the top four, getting established as a Champions League club again, because obviously we've been in and out of the Champions League far too often over the last 7 years. get established in that and then start looking at title challenges. But I don't think we're that far off. And one thing that gives me hope is we've got a good young team as well. You've got players like Mason Greenwood, Brandon Williams that are coming through. But if you look at like some Marcus Rashford, who seems like he's been around forever, 22 years old.
Yeah.
And Aaron Wan-Bissaka, 22. McTominay, I think 23. An old man at 23. Even Anthony Martial, you think, oh, Anthony Martial's, is he 23? So
yeah,
this is a team that if you keep hold of those youngsters, which you should do, in 2 or 3 years, they're going to be absolutely flying. And if you bring in the likes of a Grealish and a Sancho and maybe one or two others, yeah, I think there's a real optimism there, United. And this isn't just me being, you know, deluded and burying my head in the sand. I just feel that positivity and I feel that the club's moving in the right direction, the team's moving in the right direction. We get those signings that we've been linked with. I know there's a massive ifs and buts here because we've seen this before where we've been linked with players and it hasn't happened. But if we do get maybe a Grealish and a Sancho, again, big signings, it's not easy. Not just you don't go out and just get them for pennies. But if you do get those two signings, for example, then I think, you know, we're on our way. We're on our way to building slowly.
Listen, Jay, I'm going to have to stop you there because we're at the end. It's been an absolute blast talking to you. I'm going to let you go off and put the kids to bed. Jay Motti there.
I've sent them to sleep. I hope I've not done that to the listeners.
Nice one, Jay.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.